Welcome. My name is Mike Arie, and I will be your host as we launch this brand new podcast. I'm really excited. It's been something that's on my mind for quite some time, and I'm just really excited to finally get this idea off the ground. So let me go ahead and explain what this podcast is all about. First off, it is called Nippon 2.0. Nippon is one of the two most common ways of saying Japan, the name of the country in the Japanese language. And it is usually used in government context or to describe their national sports team. And I think it's befitting for this podcast that we call it Nippon 2.0 because I want to give it an air of being official, although it's not. But at the same time, I think when the Japanese people hear the term Nippon rather than the colloquial Nihon, there's a sense of pride. And one of the things that I wanted to use this podcast for is to share with the world and explain a lot of the inner workings of the Japanese psyche, but also break down a lot of concepts from the Japanese culture for a foreign audience. I'm myself born in the United States of Japanese descent, and so I have kind of an inner knowledge. Having been brought up in the environment, I've spent a good part of my life going back and forth between California and different parts of Japan. And so I think I've got a very interesting perspective. I've also, you know, ever since a very young age, have just been fascinated with all the different aspects of the culture, the language, the people. And so I've just got tons of knowledge that I would love to share with the world. And speaking on all subjects of Japan, very, very simple for me. So I hope that that will fuel this podcast and I will be able to constantly update the stream and make sure that there's plenty of episodes for you all to follow. That being said, the reason why I chose 2.0 is because well, I'm a tech guy. That's my trade, and so you know, having 2.0 attached to the title name, in my mind, it is to show that this podcast is a reboot of all the other podcasts that you probably can find out, you know, on the webs, describing, you know, Japanese history or walking people through the Japanese language and giving people, you know, some basic linguistic skills, or maybe even diving into, you know, certain parts of the Japanese culture, but probably more focused, right? Maybe they're talking about, you know, the otaku culture, or maybe they're talking about just food or whatever it might be. I'm going to try and cover instead more of a broader base, which kind of leads me to my next point, which is what is this podcast all about, right? So my vision is that I'll be able to cover a lot of different aspects of the culture and its people, everything from its food to places in Japan that might be of particular interest to this audience. Share with you, you know, aspects of the Japanese psyche, how they think. You know, I think there's so many different ways that we approach life in the West that is just vastly different from the way, you know, a Japanese would approach a similar scenario just by their upbringing, by their traditions, their educational background. So let me also say, well, what is this, what, you know, what is this podcast not. This isn't a historical lesson. I'm not going to bore you with all of the historical details. You can go on Wikipedia or, you know, Google these terms to find out more information. I'm going to try and give you bite-sized, you know, sized chunks of knowledge, golden nuggets, if you will, to make you dangerous. But, you know, by no means am I going to be diving into such detail that, you know, it would warrant a, you know, PhD thesis or something like that, right? I'm going to try and keep the things light. But, you know, go into a certain level of detail so that the audience, you know, feels comfortable that, you know, they're walking away, that you guys are walking away with appropriate knowledge. All right. So, who should listen to this podcast? Well, I think anyone who's interested in Japan, really. If you grew up fascinated by the cartoons that you were watching or that Sony, you know, PlayStation that you were, you know, spending countless hours on, or maybe it was a movie or a song that you heard, whatever it might be. If you've been interested in Japan or Japanese things, then this is a perfect podcast for you. If you're living in Japan, right? You're there right now. Maybe you're looking for a fresh perspective. You know, I hope to be able to provide some knowledge to folks that are there and, you know, trying to live amongst the Japanese people. Or, you know, let's say you're just interested in making a trip out there and you want to be better prepared. I think, you know, that would, you know, the information that I'm going to cover is going to be perfect for the person who wants to arrive in Narita with just that much more knowledge in his or her back pocket. All right. Okay. Let me also put a disclaimer out there. You know, I know there's a lot of things that are going on in Japan that are controversial of nature, right? Political or whatnot. I'm going to try and keep things relatively civil over here. I don't want to dive into too much, you know, debatable topics, because I think that really kind of detracts from my mission, which is to share with the world the great contributions that the Japanese people have made. So, you know, I'm going to try and stay away. Maybe for a future episode, if, you know, if my followers or want to me to cover such subjects, maybe I'll dive into. But right now, I'm thinking not. All right. So, you know, I was trying to figure out what subject I should hit on first, and I had sushi for lunch, so I think sushi would probably be a good place to start. I think the world all knows what sushi is. It's really taken off, I think, in here, especially here in the United States, but I hear in Europe and other parts of the world. Definitely areas where you have a concentration of Japanese residents, right? You know, Brazil comes to mind, or Peru, Canada. But I think even places where you don't have a Japanese national in a 100-mile radius, you could probably find sushi.
So I was on Wikipedia earlier, and
so
I wanted to just kind of
confirm some of the stuff that I already knew about sushi.
Surprisingly,
let's talk about sushi.
We share an understanding, and so. So I'm happy to report that I think for the most part, anything that I say on the subject of sushi is fairly consistent with at least what the folks on Wikipedia believe sushi to be. Something that I was told as a child was that sushi was originally developed as kind of a fast food item. You know, it wasn't really a fancy dish, not something that you would, you know, spend a whole lot of money on. And actually, sushi was, you know, for the most part, just fish, right? Fresh fish, sliced up, and served on a nice bed of rice. And so, if you can imagine, you know, going back to the, you know, the Edo days, Edo is the old name of Tokyo, right? Before, you know, the modernization of the country, right? And this is during the shogunate era. If you can imagine, you know, these stands outside with these fishermen, or maybe some trained chefs. That were just basically slicing up the catch of the day and putting it on some rice and serving it to people. And that's basically what sushi looked like. I think it was, for the most part, just, you know, for lack of a better term, a fast food item, right? Kind of like what we would expect from McDonald's today or something. It was nice and quick. And one thing that kind of stuck, you know, with me ever since I was a kid was my dad told me that a lot of people would... go to the bathhouses, and these are, you know, in Japanese called sento, and I'm definitely going to do another episode about the whole bathing culture in Japan, because it's huge. But sento and onsen, those are, you know, two common bathhouses or types of bathhouses in Japan, that pretty much everywhere. You know, people would walk out of these places very clean because they just bathed. And they would just, you know, eat some sushi right outside. And they'd use their hands. So the point here is, not only is this kind of a small historical tour of what sushi was like back in the days, but I want to kind of dive into how do you eat sushi? So many people have asked me, you know, people that have sat next to me at a sushi bar. But I've also seen these funny, you know, videos explaining how to eat sushi. You know, Anthony Bourdain on CNN, you know, he did this whole special on sushi. How do you eat sushi? You know, there was that documentary, Dreams of Sushi, right? I mean, there's just been a lot of media and a lot of press about how do you eat sushi properly. So back to my story. First thing that my dad told me was you can use your hands. So if you go back to my you know, image of these guys walking out of the bathhouses, nice and clean, probably weren't any chopsticks, you know, around. And so if you're not comfortable with chopsticks, I would say go for it and just use your hands. It's not impolite. The only weird looks you might get are from, you know, your non-Japanese friends. Because they might think, you know, eating with your hands is, you know, for whatever reason, you know, barbaric, you know, or whatnot. And so if you're not comfortable with chopsticks, definitely use your hands. The worst thing you can do is try and use chopsticks and then drop your sushi on the table or in your soy sauce dish or break your sushi up into little tiny, you know, pieces and basically making a mess, right? That's probably the worst thing you want to do. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if you are going to use chopsticks, I would definitely be delicate with it. Try not to break, the sushi up into, you know, multiple pieces. You know, sushi is kind of taking on a bit of an art form, and definitely sushi chefs, especially the good ones, they look at it as a craft, right? And so the worst thing you can do is, you know, basically destroy their piece of art. And so if you're going to use your chopsticks, hopefully you have a certain, you know, ability with them, and you're able to pick them up and navigate, maneuver them without, you know, making a mess. Let's talk about soy sauce. I don't know what it is about, you know, about Americans. I'll just say Americans. Some Americans that I know, they just love soy sauce, and they'll, like, you know, they'll douse all their stuff in it, including, you know, their rice or including their fish. Soy sauce should be used very, very gingerly, meaning just a tad, right? If you can kind of imagine a paintbrush, you know, just like one, two, you know, like a back and forth stroke. That's all the soy sauce that you need. And I would definitely try and hit the fish with the soy sauce, not the rice. See, the rice is, it's very absorbent, right? So absorb all that soy sauce. It's going to make the whole thing, just very, very soaked. That's really kind of takes away from the whole, you know, enjoyment of eating a freshly cut piece of fish. Let's see. Is there anything else I want to say about soy sauce? If the piece of fish that you're eating is already utilizing some other sauce, give you an example. Unagi, which is a sea eel. Usually there is a special, you know, almost like a teriyaki looking kind of dark sauce that the chef will apply to it using a brush. That's all the sauce you need. Yeah, I wouldn't go and put that in soy sauce. Okay. So if there's already soy sauce on your fish, or if there's already some kind of sauce on your fish, then you don't need soy sauce. And if you're not sure, ask the sushi chef if you're sitting at the bar, or ask the waitress if you're sitting at a table. And this is also common with you know, certain rolls or pieces of fish that may have ponzu sauce. Ponzu is a, I don't know how to say that in English. You can look it up later. But ponzu is another kind of sauce that's sometimes used to give it kind of more of a light taste to it. Okay? But that's all I'll say on soy sauce. Some people will also take the fish off of the rice, put in the soy sauce, and put it back on the fish. Put it back on the rice and then eat it. You can do that. That might be a lot of soy sauce, right? But it's perfectly acceptable. I don't particularly like doing it because it kind of destroys, you know, again, the piece of sushi that was made for you, especially if you're sitting at a bar, again, you know, going back to the whole craft thing. But if you're at home or whatever, that's a really easy way to not get soy sauce on the rice. All right. Let's talk a little bit about wasabi, because it's very, very interesting what I see here in the States and what I'm used to in Japan, which is in Japan, they'll never put a little piece of wasabi on your plate. All the wasabi that you should have is already in your sushi. The chef has already predetermined how much wasabi you should have. Now, I don't know why that got changed. I think probably there's just a good population of Americans and other foreigners, right? If you're listening to this podcast in Europe or, you know, other parts of the world, there's probably just a good population of people who are not into wasabi. And they don't want any of it. And so in the States and probably everywhere else but Japan, there's no wasabi in your sushi. And so all the wasabi is put on the side. And they basically allow, you know, whoever is eating the sushi to determine how much wasabi you should have. Or how much wasabi you want to put on it. Because you can customize, right? If you are doing this, there's a couple ways you can get around applying the wasabi correctly. You can break off a chunk of the wasabi, put it in the soy sauce dish, and mix it up a little bit. So now you've got kind of this, concoction of broken down wasabi in your soy sauce. It kind of comes out like a little bit of a pasty, you know, look to it. Or you can break off a piece of wasabi, apply it to your sushi. Maybe you smear it a little bit on the fish, and then you dip it into the soy sauce and then pop it in your mouth. Whatever. My only warning here is don't eat too much wasabi. I mean, it's kind of like the whole soy sauce thing. Take it just a little bit to add a little bit of flavor, but you don't want it to be so overwhelming that you're basically, masking the taste of the fish, okay, which should be, you know, at the core, right, of the whole sushi eating experience. Okay. Ginger, or in Japanese it's called gari. Ginger is also usually, you know, on the side, and you'll find this in Japan. Gari is also served just like it is here in the States. It, you know, they'll have either a small bowl with the gari already in it, or they'll put some on your plate. What is that for? So many people have asked me, right? The ginger is supposed to be eaten as a way to clean your palate. So, you know, when you're eating all these different kinds of fish, and you're probably only eating, you know, two pieces of each type before you move on to the next one. Our tongues, right, are not that sophisticated to just, you know, wipe the slate clean. So that when you have the next piece of fish, you're not, you know, tainted by what you just ate. So the ginger is there to kind of clean the plate. It's a means of just kind of refreshing the palate, so that when the next piece of fish that you eat, you know, probably a different kind of fish, you'll be able to experience it fully. Okay. So that's basically, oh, one other thing. If you're going to eat sushi, eat it in one bite. Unless you're, you know, 5 years old, you know, or 4 years old, like my son, and you can't fit the whole thing in your mouth, then yeah, you know, you're gonna have to, you know, bite down on it, and it's gonna break, okay? But again, the whole idea is you don't want to break it. It's one piece, and you want to take it all, right? And so, put it all in your mouth and just chew it up. Don't bite it, break it. It's just going to make a mess. That's, you know, in an essence, all the things, you know, these aren't rules or guide, you know, these are more guidelines, right? No one's going to give you crap for eating sushi the wrong way. But, again, like so many things in the Japanese culture, the process has been refined over the centuries. And so, you know, I'm giving you this information so that not only will you impress your Japanese colleagues, but you'll also have a better experience eating sushi. So what are some good sushi to sample? Well, my recommendation is always kind of sticking with the basics. And these are like, you know, your tuna, your salmon, you know, your sea urchin or salmon roe, which, you know, to some is a little bit too adventurous. But I would definitely recommend that you try it at least once to see if you like it. But one recommendation, if you're sitting at a sushi bar especially, is to ask the chef, you know, and you can ask in English, right? Or if you're in Japan, probably not so. But, you know, figure out how to say it in Japanese if you're in Japan. But it's always a good idea to ask the chef what's fresh. And he'll tell you, right? He'll tell you what's been recently brought in, you know, and not what's been sitting in the freezer for the last 2 weeks. So those are just a couple tips, right? The other thing is I would kind of shy away from all of the modern concoctions of sushi. You know, I mean, if you want to have a California roll, that's fine. But, you know, the whole roll thing has kind of taken a life on its own. And if you like that stuff, that's great. But just know that that's not Japanese sushi. You know, that's something that was invented here. So, you know, what I'm talking about is like Philadelphia rolls and, you know, rainbow rolls or spicy whatever rolls. Look, if it's got cream cheese in it, I'm pretty sure it was not invented by a Japanese person. So I kind of stick with like the standard stuff, the standard fare, because I'm a traditionalist, but that's I'll share that. As far as like stuff to drink while you're eating sushi, what's more common than not actually is green tea. But you know, you'll see a lot of people drinking beer or sake. Now, you know, traditionalists would say, you know, too much alcohol kind of dumbs the senses, and you're not, again, experiencing all of the different dimensions of the fish that you're having. And so, there's one side of the fence that will say, you're here to eat fish and experience it end to end. You should probably just stick with green tea. But look, everyone's had a bad day, or, you know, at least some of us have. And so, beer, sake, it's all fair game. One other thing about eating sushi, or the best, a recommendation on how to eat sushi. I like to end with the egg. And this is something that I've been doing. And I think something I picked up along the way, probably from my dad. The reason that I like to end with tamago, which is the egg, is because it is the only traditional nigiri, or packed sushi that looks like all the other pieces of sushi out there, that's wholly concocted by the chef, right? And every restaurant will have a different formula, different recipe for how to create that egg. And so you're going to see a lot of the chef's creativity. And if the restaurant has a, persona, you're going to see that, in the egg. It's quite prevalent, where you may not see that necessarily with the fish, because look, quite frankly, if the fish is fresh, it's going to taste pretty darn good. Rice has a big part of it too. Don't get me wrong. You go there to eat, really well-prepared sushi rice. If you've got crappy rice, look, you can have the best fish possible, but look, look at the ratio. I mean, it's probably 70% rice. And so in terms of flavor, you're going to get a lot of, the aspects of the rice. And so, yes, the chef, the restaurant, they control the rice, but with the egg, again, the tamago, you're eating something that was 100% controlled by the restaurant. The egg was, got its own recipe, and the rice obviously has its own magic as well. Where to kind of get good sushi? If you're in Japan, look, anywhere, you're probably going to have great sushi, like literally. If you're having bad sushi in Japan, something's wrong. One thing that I've noticed, though, and you may run into this, is different parts of Japan should serve different kinds of fish. This goes back to how, Japan has always been much more local communities, right? As opposed to, the whole, spread of conformatism that you might see in like chain restaurants or something, right? What you'll see typically in Japan is local fish, especially if you're going to the smaller stores, smaller sushi bars. On the Pacific Ocean side, you're going to see a lot more redfish, tunas. If you go on the Sea of Japan side, interestingly enough, you're going to see a lot more colder ocean fish, and it's going to be a lot of the, the white types. If you're in Japan, I definitely go and explore and try different sushi in different prefectures, especially, the ones that are really big on fishing, like, Toyama, Ishikawa, Niigata, those are Hokkaido, definitely. Those are, really big fishing spots, and so you're going to get a variety of different kinds of fish that you may not necessarily get every day in Tokyo. In Tokyo, you've got tsukiji, and that's the fish market, and so yeah, you probably can get a little bit of everything, but trust me, if you can get out into the countryside, I would definitely go and check out some of the local sushi bars, because you will see different kinds of fish. If you're in the States, you know, the big cities typically have the best sushi. You know, LA, San Francisco, New York. Hawaii's got some great sushi as well, just because of the population there, being, you know, so many Nisei, Sanseis, Yonseis, etc., as well as Japanese visitors. So, you know, Hawaii is always a good spot. But if you're in the middle of the country, you know, if you're in a big city, you're probably getting some fresh fish. And, you know, I just saw this documentary recently where, you know, a place in Austin was getting tuna flown in from Australia. So it's possible. My recommendation is to try and find a sushi bar that Japanese people go and eat at. That's always a safe bet. Or, you know, better yet, if the sushi chef is Japanese, that's always a good sign too. But that might not always be the case. You know, I've been to plenty of sushi bars, you know, that are operated by Chinese or Koreans. And so, you know, you may not be able to tell. But I will say, you know, I've had some really great sushi at some Chinese places too. So, yeah, I wouldn't judge. But if you can find, you know, a place that actually has some Japanese customers, you're probably in a good spot. How to tell if the sushi is good? You know, I wrote that down because I wanted to see if I can dive into, you know, describing if sushi is good. You know, it's really kind of hard. I think when you have a really clean taste, when there isn't really an aftertaste, that's when you've got good sushi. Also, if the sushi is warm, right, like body temperature warm, then you're in good shape too. I hate cold sushi, especially like if you go to the market and you pick up some sushi. It's typically been sitting in that refrigerator for a couple hours, and not a good sign. Yeah, I would stay away from, you know, sushi that's been sitting for a long time. Even the conveyor belt, you know, kaiten sushi. If you go to a place that serves sushi that's a little cold or hard, like the grains of rice are hard, yeah, probably not a good spot. I actually heard this, you know, and it's probably true. I hope this doesn't offend anyone. But at least in Japan, where, you know, social norms are not as modern as they are here in the West, but I'll say it anyway. All sushi chefs in Japan are male, or probably 99% of them are. And even the ones here, you know, that I've seen in Los Angeles, you know, they're probably 99% male as well. The reason is, or so I've been told, is that men have a higher body temperature. And so their hands are typically warmer. And so that keeps the sushi at the right temperature, the right serving temperature. You know, could be an old wives' tale, but next time you go to a sushi bar, look around. And if you see a female sushi chef, let me know. I'm interested. I only know of, I think, one restaurant here in LA County where the owner and the, you know, the sushi chef is the owner, and she's a lady. So I could only think of one, and I've been to plenty of sushi restaurants. You know, obviously, if you don't get sick, that's probably the sign that you've had good sushi. You know, I would experiment. You know, see what you like. I like a clean taste, like I said earlier. Other couple things about sushi. You know, sushi is not just a piece of fish that's served on rice. There's a lot of different ways that you can eat sushi. Sashimi is cut pieces of fish that's served on a plate, and you're given usually a bowl of rice, and you can kind of control how much rice you're eating, you know, with the sashimi. A lot of people love that, especially people who are a little carb sensitive, right? They want to kind of control how much rice they're taking. Sashimi could be a great way of doing that. There is also chirashi sushi, which is like, you know, one of my favorites. Chirashi sushi is a bowl of rice where a variety of different fish are served on top. And you kind of eat the whole thing together, right? So, you know, what I said earlier about cleaning the palate, you know, and with the ginger and all of that, scratch that, right? So chirashi sushi is like bowl of rice and all of the fish is just kind of laid on top in a very beautiful assortment. And you just kind of go to town on the whole thing. So another great option for you if you're at a sushi bar. Or a sushi restaurant, usually served again at the table, not at the bar. So I think that really kind of hits all of the main areas that I wanted to touch on with sushi. You know, I think if you're a fan of sushi, hope you learned something new. If you are not a sushi eater but you're interested, hopefully I spurred you on to, you know, take that leap. Sushi's great. It's fantastic. It's, you know, something I eat almost weekly. I even go through withdrawals if I don't get my weekly fixing. So anyway, that's my episode, and I hope to see you in future episodes. I hope you had a good time. Signing off. Thanks.